The Spectator is having a flash sale. Get 12 issues of the magazine for just £12, in print and online. Plus, we'll give you a bottle of Johnnie Walker Black Label Whiskey, completely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/sale. Be quick, the offer ends on Monday.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by The Spectator columnist Matthew Paris and Polly McKenzie, chief executive of Demos and former advisor to Nick Clegg. The Liberal Democrats, have you heard much about them recently? Since Ed Davey took over the party, you couldn't exactly describe him as garnering too many column inches. Yet, in this week's Spectator, Matthew Paris discusses where they are politically, and he talks about the sogification of the Liberal Democrats. Matthew, could you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. When I was at university, I joined the Liberal Club at my university because liberals seemed to me to stand for individual freedom. They had nothing to do with socialism, nothing to do with collectivism. They had a good, strong social conscience, which the Tories didn't seem to have. So that's what I liked about them, social conscience and individual freedom. The individual freedom, I think, has dropped almost out of sight in the years in which I've been following politics. And Liberal Democrats now, one just thinks of as being in favour of government doing something about everything that's going wrong, helping everybody that needs any kind of help, passing laws to stop any kind of evil being said or thought or happening. In other words, a sort of strangely soft left, slightly local government oriented organisation of perfectly nice people, but no longer standing for the rather spiky belief in individual liberty that I joined the Liberals for all those years ago.
Polly, you've obviously spent a lot of time with the Liberal Democrats working for them, particularly when Nick Clegg was Deputy Prime Minister. Do you agree with what Matthew Paris says? I mean, I'm putting words into his mouth here, but have the Liberal Democrats got a bit meh?
A bit meh. Matthew would certainly never say such a ridiculous word. But wording aside, I mean, I think Matthew is broadly right. The Lib Dem Party has shrunk, obviously, quite catastrophically and struggled to find its way. And whereas when the party was tiny in Parliament and yet still had an existence in the country in the 70s, it was driven by a philosophy that Joe Grimond established, which was around community politics, not just as a practical way to get bums on council seats, but an actual way of thinking about how individuals should exist within a democracy and what activism ought to look like. And I'm an enormous fan of Ed Davey on a personal level. He was my first ever boss in politics. And, you know, in some ways, he is a sort of orange book liberal. He used to be a management consultant. He did, you know, privatization of postal services in other countries around the world. You know, so there's a sort of tiny bit of him, which is a bit Oliver Letwin-like, you know. Oliver, I think, privatized things across Eastern Europe after the end of the Cold War, for example. And yet, what is his big campaign as leader of the Liberal Democrats? It's about carers. And as Matthew says, I mean, it's a strong social conscience issue. Carers are important. The life of somebody, as Ed knows very directly, having cared for his, I mean, the number of family members that he's been a carer for is so long, I can't even remember it all. So he's sort of right. And yet it does feel a little bit kind of meh. Which is why Matthew's a columnist and I'm not.
Matthew, if we're going to call it the decline into, you know, the sogification or meh, not your word, what do you think was the turning point and how long do you think it's been going on? Because we're talking about Ed Davey, but in your column you mentioned Joe Swinson. What do you think has been the point when this has, you know, started to take form and then expand from there?
Oh, a very, very long time ago. Ed Davey is by no means the worst offender, though I really did raise an eyebrow when the first thing he ever got into the newspapers recently for saying was that there should be a memorial for NHS workers who had died during the pandemic. I mean, maybe there should, but I just want the Liberal Democrats to stand for a bit more than that sort of thing. But even Nick Clegg was in a little bit of a minority, well, a big minority in a sense in his party, in doing a deal with the Conservatives. And before Nick Clegg, I don't think that, for instance, David Steele, even Paddy Ashdown, though he had his spiky side, David Steele was pretty much a social democrat. And you ask the reason. I think the reason is this. I think that as the size of the parliamentary party has dwindled, and as they've endured successive ice ages when they really only had a handful of people in the House of Commons at all, I mean, they've gone lower than they are at the moment, so the party has come increasingly to depend upon its activists. And its activists are out there in the country. They're treading the pavements, putting round focus-style leaflets. They're on local councils. They're doing quite well on local councils. They control a number of local councils, but they're a completely different kind of liberal from the liberals that I associate, for instance, with Joe Grimond, or even, dare I whisper his name, with Jeremy Thorpe.
What do you say to that, Polly?
I think, obviously, there's a lot of truth in that, but I think it's important to think through the different kind of tiers. You've got the parliamentary party, which obviously reached a peak under Charles Kennedy, came down a tiny bit under Nick Clegg, but disappeared almost entirely in 2015 at a really series of very difficult general elections. Then you've got activists, as Matthew describes, almost exactly correctly, and then the party members. And the funny thing is, all the work we did during the coalition years with the members, obviously the ones who really hated the coalition had left, right? Nevertheless, there were tens of thousands of Liberal Democrat Party members who were liberals. The activist base was quite different, though. The activist base was strongly in favour of local government doing stuff, because that was their base. It's how they got elected, and therefore was very often in the absolute front line of being against house building, against post office closures, just sort of against stuff, because it's very easy actually to be against stuff in opposition. That's what local government, you know, has a permanent enemy in central government, and that is quite different. It is quite different from, I guess, the parts of liberalism that survived the kind of hegemony of the rise of Labour, which was a sort of grouchy, rural, everybody hates me and I resent you back view of individual freedom, which I rather like and admire, which sort of stayed, you know, in Orkney and Shetland or the far bits of Norfolk and Cornwall and rural Wales, where I spent most of my childhood. And that sort of scepticism about the state, that's not about, oh, let free markets dominate everything and we love big business, is something that I just think is missing from the whole of our national politics. And it's partly because the way the Labour Party rose, you know, 100 whatever years ago, spread liberals and the liberal tradition across three parties. And liberals still don't have a home. And occasionally they are in power or dominance within the other two political parties. But certainly at the moment, it feels like they've been driven to the extremes by statists of left and right.
Matthew, do you think part of the problem is, I think if you asked people, you know, for recent impressions of what the Liberal Democrats stand for, I think one of the things you would get back is, you know, anti-Brexit, pro the EU. And it's been such a big part of the Liberal Democrat identity in recent elections. Do you think it's meant that actually you've had quite a few figures who just haven't been thinking about a philosophy beyond that?
Yes, that's exactly what I think. And I think if you look at it in Darwinian terms, that the survival of the fittest, if you have a series of ice ages, which the liberals have had, they're in a bit of one now, the creatures that manage to survive the ice ages, the creatures that find a rock to crawl under and stay warm until it's safe to come out again, are the ones who will, as it were, survive the evolutionary struggle. And with the Lib Dems, the town halls, the district councils, have been the rocks under which the liberals that managed to survive have kept warm. And that explains the change in the party. But I'd add something that actually Polly just touched on a moment ago. I mentioned my column to by my young assistant. Well, he's 29. I call that young. And he said, yeah, but that's not just a truth about the liberals or the Liberal Democrats. He said, I don't know any young people anymore whose big thing is individual freedom and personal liberty. Both on the left and the right, they're all talking about the state and the power of the state and what the state can and should do. And on the left, they think it should do some things. And on the right, they think it should do other things. But the young people that are just talking about the individual versus the state, he said, I don't hear those conversations anymore. So maybe the modern Lib Dems are simply reflecting a change in society, and it's people like me who are becoming extinct.
Polly, do you think if Ed Davey started to make some of the arguments Matthew is talking about, you know, about individual liberty and so forth, it would have an audience? Is the problem more that no one is doing that, or that actually there isn't the market there?
I think it all comes down to what charity leader bureaucrats would call your theory of change, which sounds ridiculous, but anyway. But I think it's worth thinking through, right? Nigel Farage's theory of change, how is he going to get change, did not involve securing lots of seats in local government, really, or that many seats, any seats in Parliament, except sort of by the back door. And yet it's arguable that, much to my chagrin, he has had more impact on politics than, you know, almost anyone in the last generation. The Liberal Democrats have a theory of change which is predicated on a path to slowly building up a local government base and a parliamentary party, and that is how they will secure impact in our system. And our system is a first-past-the-post system, which is brutal to third parties. So I think that there are basically two options for it, David, right? Like, you could decide to just basically sod the local government base, sod the parliamentary party, find a way to be an advocate for liberal freedom, for free enterprise, for, you know, it doesn't mean you abandon the idea that the state has a role. It has a role about empowerment and liberal, you know, all sorts of political theory stuff. But you're probably not going to then be able to successfully have a party base that does really good bin related campaigns in, you know, upper Sodenham or whatever it is. And what's the pathway to change? I mean, I think it's sort of devastating that liberalism doesn't really have a home in our parliament, given, you know, the liberal tradition and its role in English and British history. But in a first-past-the-post system, I think actually the reality is that the anomaly was the time when the Liberal Democrats were up to 50 seats, not now. How do you make that change? Probably, I think they will choose the sogification strategy and sort of bumble around at 15 seats or something. And maybe politics will shift in such a way that it means it's just easy to ride on the coattails of Labour again, as sort of happened in 1997. And there will be a Liberal Democrat Party of 20, 25, 30. But will it have shifted the landscape of British politics toward freedom? I'm not sure it will have done. And I think that's a shame.
Yes, Matthew, I suppose a few final points, but as Polly touches on, there is an argument you often hear, which is historically the Liberal Democrats do well when Labour does well. Keir Starmer, although potentially going for quite a similar voter that, you know, all Lib Dem switches, could actually boost Lib Dem prospects because people will be less worried about giving their vote to the third party and risking a Labour government if it's Keir Starmer. So you could envision a scenario where, by being, you know, a bit soggy, they still increase their gains, they potentially get to hold a little bit of power in the parliament, and then they could start to have stronger views or start to articulate things more. Do you think that's a viable scenario? Can you see why that might appeal to Ed Davey?
Yes, and I think there is truth in it, and it is true that the Lib Dems tend to do well when Labour are doing well, and that's because the Lib Dems tend to do well when there's widespread national disillusion with the Conservatives. And one of the reasons why Lib Dems do well in those circumstances is that they get the votes of disaffected Conservatives like me. They got my vote at the last general election. They get the votes of disaffected Conservatives. So it remains important for the Lib Dems to appear, to make clear that they are welcoming to people who think in a Conservative way.
I suppose finally, to both of you, I mean, if you were advising Ed Davey, perhaps some on this podcast even have conversations with Ed Davey, what would you suggest that he should do when it comes to appealing to the type of voter that Matthew is talking about, one that he himself can identify as, when it comes to the next couple of years?
I think there is clearly a gap in British politics for a Liberal Party that understands the economy, that wants to see us prosper, that understands the way that markets and freedom can in fact shift us towards a green economy that can allow more people to have power and opportunity in our society. I just don't see the point of being a two-bit half-baked Labour Party. I'm not sure if there is any pathway to real political success from being the Liberal Party, but I just don't see the point of doing anything else So I'm not sure it would be good advice if Ed wants a job and a large number of political colleagues in Parliament. But if you want to be in the Labour Party, just, you know what? Join the Labour Party. It's fine.
Matthew, what would you like to see Ed get up and say tomorrow, get in the papers for, which isn't this, you know, coronavirus NHS monument?
Well, I'd like to see him worrying a bit about the debt that Britain is incurring. I'd like to see him worrying about the small businesses that are going under because of the coronavirus restrictions. I'd like to feel that the Lib Dems worry a little bit about the infringement on human freedom, on individual liberties that's taking place just at the moment. All those things, I'd like him to be the kind of leader that could tempt me to vote Lib Dem again at the next election. And it may be, and we don't know, that the Conservative Party will sort of go slightly red wall crazy and become a much more populist party than it was before. And there may be millions of votes in London, in the South East, and in thinking parts of the Midlands and the North that don't want to vote Labour and are not populists and could be attracted to the Lib Dems. If they could be brave enough to remain open, hospitable to those votes, there might be a dividend from it. But I agree with Polly, it can't be certain, and I wouldn't even be confident that dividend is going to be there.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Polly. And thank you for listening.